The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Please keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times.
This is your final warning.
Now, here's your host, Mr. Thrill Ride himself, Eric Metaxas.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you. Folks, I don't know how we do it, but we seem to get some extraordinary guests into the studio here in New York. Today, I'm privileged to sit with someone who lets me call him Tom, but you may know him as N.T. Wright. He is certainly one of the world's leading Bible scholars, someone whose work and friendship I've been very grateful for. He is also the chair of New Testament and Early Christianity at the School of Divinity at the University of St. Andrews. And he's an Anglican bishop, yada, yada, yada. N.T. Wright, how wonderful to have you here.
It's good to
Thank
be back,
you.
Eric. Thank you.
Now, the problem is I want to talk to you about everything. So let's start somewhere specifically, and then we can move on to the rest of the universe. I can't remember. I think you were on the program a year or so ago when your biography of Paul came out.
No, it was 2 years ago when The Day the Revolution Began had just come out.
Okay. That's why I'm confused, because we haven't discussed your biography of Paul.
Right.
I want to discuss that with you, but I also want to discuss with you, anybody who knows what the Gifford Lectures are is impressed with anyone who's been elected to give them, you most recently. So let's talk about that. Okay. And usually when someone gives the Gifford Lectures, they publish them as a book. So is that book going to be out soon?
The book is on the way. I actually sent off what I hope is the final draft to the publishers a week ago, last Friday, wherever we are, and it'll be out sometime in the fall.
And what is the title of this book?
The title of this book, which has a deliberateness to it, is History and Eschatology. And then, in case people find that's a bit heavy, the subtitle is Jesus and the Promise of Natural Theology. And the history and eschatology bit is because the last New Testament scholar to do the Gifford Lectures, which are normally done by philosophers and systematic theologians, The last New Testament scholar to do it was a famous man called Rudolf Bultmann, and he did them in 1955.
Now, hang on a tick, as they say, in your neck of the woods. I feel like that can't be possible.
Yeah, well, they don't normally.
Bultmann is the last New Testament
scholar to do the Giffords, because it's normally philosophers and people like that. So I figured out, if we biblical people are going to be allowed a shot roughly every half century, then if I keep the ball rolling, then maybe in 2050 something, somebody else will pick it up. But anyway, the idea is, you know, Christianity is rooted in historical events, namely the events concerning Jesus. But how do we know what history is? And this eschatology thing, the future and what happens if the future invades the present in some way, and is Jesus in the middle of that, and what do we do about it? The very, very interesting sets of questions.
Well, you have written and spoken a lot on this issue, and I think there are probably people listening who are confused even about what this issue is, because it's a little bit complicated. Let's talk about that. The idea, for example, the ideas of heaven and hell, and what that means, and the this historical idea in the Christian faith that they are these places to which one goes after one dies. It's a little bit more complicated than that, and you have done a lot of work in helping us figure out what that means.
Yeah, it's much more complicated. I mean, heaven is important, but it's not the end of the world. That's the strapline.
Do you mean not the end of the world?
Yes, I do.
In every sense of that?
The climax of God's plan for his world is the new heavens and the new earth. And in the Bible, it isn't heaven, hell, and we're just in a kind of a holding pattern here. It's we are waiting for heaven and earth to come together. In Paul's letter to the Ephesians, he says God's plan is to sum up in Christ all things in heaven and on earth, not to take us earthlings away from earth to a place called heaven. So heaven is the holding pattern against the day when God does the new heaven and new earth and raises us from the dead.
I only understand this somewhat better now because of having written my biography of Martin Luther, in which I was able to see fairly clearly for the first time that many Christians have this, this is not the right term, but I will call it a kind of a replacement theology where they say earth bad, heaven good.
Exactly.
And it's, I guess, Aristotelian maybe, but we don't need to get into that. But I was going to say that it's a bad idea because God wants to redeem the earth, not do away with it and replace it with heaven. Is that what you're getting at?
That's the crucial thing, but it's not just Plato and Aristotle, though Plato particularly is hovering in the background for some of this. But one of the things that was fascinating to me doing the research for the Giffords was to look at the 18th and 19th centuries in Western culture in general to see the revival of Epicureanism. Now, Epicurus and his great poet prophet Lucretius in the first century BC believed that if the gods existed, they were a long way away. They didn't concern us and we didn't concern them. And so you just had to make the best of where you were at the moment. Now, in the 18th century, that suddenly came from being a minority view to being mainstream. Your very own beloved Thomas Jefferson said on one occasion, "I am an Epicurean." Now, he was many other things as well.
He's not as beloved to me as to some, go ahead.
But the point then is that we've assumed, and this is really the Enlightenment, a split between heaven and earth. So, you know, no prayer in schools or whatever it is. These play out in your country more than in mine. And then Christians have tried to make their peace with that by adopting Plato's idea that, well, yeah, the heaven is a long way away, but we have this thing called a soul, and one day it'll be going back there. And I say to people, you go to the first century looking for somebody who does that. You know who it is? It's not Paul. It's not Jesus. It's a guy called Plutarch, who was a pagan priest in the shrine at Delphi, and he was a philosopher and a biographer, a guy rather like you, actually, except maybe a bit different.
But he was Greek, wasn't he?
He was.
I'm only half Greek.
He was Greek, and he was very smart. And so there we are.
Oh, thank you.
But Plutarch says, our souls are in exile from heaven, and we're waiting to go back there. And I've often thought, that's what most modern Western Christians think. That's Platonism. It's not Christianity.
Okay, now, this is very deep stuff, maybe not for you, but I want to make sure that my audience is tracking because it's extremely important. I guess where I would start is this idea that we're somehow, as you said, we're exiled here. There's always truth to these things, but if you take it too far, for me, the irony is the Enlightenment, that we Christians have adopted or we've allowed the Enlightenment to affect us in such a way that it has messed with our view of the Scripture.
Exactly. And it's transformed the way that central theological issues are handled, like was Jesus both divine and human? Well, the Enlightenment says divine and human, those are totally different.
Right.
So this is just a silly idea.
Right.
And then particularly eschatology, from the late 19th century onwards, since Albert Schweitzer, people have been taught in seminary that Jesus and his followers expected the end of the world very soon and that they were disappointed. They thought the world was going to end. The reason they thought that, Schweitzer and his colleagues, was because they were thinking in terms of a heaven which is totally different, so that if the kingdom of heaven arrives, earth is going to have to get out of the way to make room for it. Now, what we've forgotten is how Jews think, which is that in the temple, heaven and earth come together. And in the Sabbath, and many Jews think like this to this day, in the Sabbath, the future mysteriously arrives in the present. So the Jews have a way of thinking about space and time within which Jesus' announcement of the kingdom of God makes sense, but quite a different sense from what we post-Enlightenment Westerners have imagined.
One of the ways I try to think of this, and I'm inviting you to help me figure this out, but when Paul is in prison and he is in chains and he says, and yet we are seated with him, with the Lord, in heavenly places even now. When we are born again, we are immediately, to some extent, in heaven.
Yes, yes. And again, Ephesians is one of the classic statements of that, already seated with him in heavenly place. And, you know, people say it's very grandiose vision. How could Paul possibly say that? And the answer is, as you say, because if you are part of Jesus's people, part of the messianic family, if you like, the Messiah's people, then Jesus is already exalted at the right hand of God. And that's in a sense metaphorical language, but in a sense it isn't. This is the reality. But you have to think differently about heaven and earth in order to get there.
Forgive me for interrupting. We're going to go to a quick break. Folks, we'll be right back with N.T. Wright. Stick around.
We have some exciting news for the 64 million households that still have a landline telephone. You've probably had the same telephone number for years, and it's important to you. Family, friends, colleagues, doctors, and a lifetime of connections have that number as a way of connecting with you. Now there's an exciting service that allows you to keep your important home number and get rid of that expensive landline. OurOldNumber.com is revolutionizing how we use that important home telephone number. With OurOldNumber.com, calls to your home telephone number can reach any member of the family wherever they are. Callers hear a personalized greeting from you, select the family member they wish to reach, and the call is immediately forwarded onto that family member's cell phone. There's no equipment needed or long-term contracts, and it's only $9.99 per month. Best of all, it eliminates those pesky sales calls. It's easy to get started. Just go to OurOldNumber.com and follow the directions. That's OurOldNumber.com.
Hi, this is Alexander Green, Chief Investment Strategist for the Oxford Club. Just for a moment, I'd like you to picture the perfect stock. No doubt it would have hundreds of billions in revenue, more than IBM, Facebook, and Google. It would probably be a leader in cutting-edge technology like smartphones and robotics. It would be on the verge of dozens of blockbuster announcements. But most of all, it would be ultra-cheap, trading at less than $3 a share. Now, it may seem crazy that such a stock exists, but it does. It's a cutting-edge tech company that has made deals worth hundreds of millions of dollars with Nokia, Microsoft, and Cisco, and a $29.2 billion deal with Apple. It's set to create 50,000 new jobs right here in America, and Donald Trump even calls it the eighth wonder of the world. Yet you've likely never even heard of the stock. Why? Because it trades under a secret name. To find out why the secret $3 stock can help you retire, simply go to OneStockRetirement.com. That's OneStockRetirement.com.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to tackle those home projects you've been putting off. So come summertime, you can just sit back and relax. Home Advisor can help get you started. Home Advisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. Home Advisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. Find a great pro now before the busy season hits. Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app. Home
Advisor. Hi, Hugh Hewitt here for PatriotMobile.com. Go and sign up today at PatriotMobile.com/Hugh, and I'll tell you why. You can support your values with veteran-led Patriot Mobile, America's only conservative cell phone company, providing reliable, indeed crystal-clear nationwide coverage, the same coverage you get with AT&T, Verizon, all of them. It's very easy to switch to Patriot Mobile. You keep your same phone number, you bring your own device, or you buy a new one. You enjoy no hidden fees, no roaming fees, no liberal agenda. And Patriot Mobile, more than $2 million have already been used to support your constitutional rights. Imagine what we could do with you on our side when you switch to Patriot Mobile. With unlimited talk and text plans starting as low as $25 a month, don't wait. Visit patriotmobile.com/Hugh. That's patriotmobile.com/Hugh. Join me. I've got my Patriot Mobile phone right here. Join me and stop the left. Switch to patriotmobile.com today. We need you now more than ever. Visit patriotmobile.com/Hugh.
Attention timeshare owners. Getting out of your timeshare is probably at the top of your to-do list. Hi, I'm Karen, owner of Lone Star Transfer. With rising costs, you probably wish you had a way to get out of that burdensome and expensive timeshare. Thankfully, we can help. Our process is done legally, ethically, and quickly. Give us a call for a no-obligation consultation at 844-284-4863. That's 844-284-4863. Or visit us online at LoneStarTransfer.com.
You sheltered me from harm, kept me warm, kept me warm.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
You gave my life.
I get to sit here and have a conversation with N.T. Wright. I think that's pretty good. And he lets me call him Tom, which is ridiculous. Tom, we're talking about tremendously important things. You have the talent to be able to take somewhat difficult concepts and translate them such that we in the pews can understand them better. You were just making this big point about how it's only in the last 200 years somehow, because this in your Gifford lectures titled History and Eschatology, Jesus and the Promise of Natural Theology, you talk about this idea that historically, only in the last 200 years has Christendom kind of shifted to a somewhat mistaken view of what the scripture actually says about heaven and earth and about the end of heaven, the end of earth, and, you know.
It goes further back because, in a sense, what the Enlightenment in the last 200 or 300 years is reacting to is kind of the late medieval synthesis, which you see in Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel, which you see in Dante's Inferno and Paradiso and Purgatorio, that this was a medieval way of looking at things about heaven and hell. And there were different reactions to that. The rise of modern Epicureanism, which started 100 years before Luther's great moment, 1417, Poggio Bracciolini discovered the manuscript of Lucretius, the great ancient Epicurean philosopher. He was reacting against the medievals in one way. Luther was reacting in a different way.
So humanism is to account for the rediscovery of Lucretius?
Well, this guy went around Europe looking for manuscripts and, struck gold. But then that has worked its way through via Machiavelli and Hobbes and goodness knows. It's a fascinating story. But it results today in the fact that the Western world has split apart heaven and earth, and then Christians think that we have to split apart heaven and hell. And both of those are deep-rooted mistakes in how we read Scripture. So a phrase like the kingdom of heaven, people assume that that means a place called heaven to which you go when you die, maybe. No, Jesus taught us to pray, thy kingdom come on earth as in heaven. And in my experience, many Western Christians have hardly begun to figure out what that might mean.
Actually, even when I have prayed, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven, even I have had this idea that I'm praying about something which is far in the distance rather than something that I ought to be expecting now.
Well, but it's very clear at the end of Matthew's gospel, the risen Jesus says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. And that phrase is echoing the kingdom language from the book of Daniel. And it basically means the kingdom has been launched. And in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says the same thing.
Have you ever thought of becoming a Bible scholar?
Well, one of these days, maybe I'll get around to it.
I think you're ready to go professional.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
Okay, so when you say these things,
I'll have to give up the day job.
These are big ideas, dare I say, paradigm shifting ideas, and probably that's your goal because they're so deep rooted that it's not an easy thing. When we talk, for example, about heaven and hell, and you just made a statement that they're to separate heaven and hell. What do you mean by that? I'm not following that.
The picture people have in mind is that one from Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel of Jesus in majesty, bringing some souls upstairs to heaven and sending some others downstairs. Now, you will know one of my favorite books by C.S. Lewis, but I don't think it's yours, is that wonderful book, The Great Divorce, where he describes heaven, but it's actually a new earth. It's a renewed physicality. And for him, hell is so thin and slight and insubstantial because it's basically a place of negation. And the idea that they're sort of equal and opposite, Lewis is trying to break out of that.
Actually, that is one of my favorite Lewis's book. We were just talking with Father Fessio, and I said, well, you know, it's a pity we don't get to talk about that, but I get to talk about it with you. Yeah. It is one of my favorite books because one of the it's really a unique genius that Lewis has to be able to help us imagine what is otherwise unimaginable.
Exactly. And good stories will do that.
Yeah.
But when you go back to the Bible itself, people assume that the language of heaven and the language of punishment, of Gehenna and so on, means what it meant in the High Middle Ages. And it really doesn't.
Okay, well, when you say it really doesn't, we really should talk about that because many people live their lives under this impression.
Well, the simplest solution is, and we've actually got some course material on this, but my book, Surprised by Hope, which we maybe have talked about
we
before.
We have talked about that.
It's 10 years or more old now, but I get more messages, phone calls, emails about that book than all my others put together, because I think particularly in America, people have found, oh my goodness, maybe this is how the Bible works on these big questions of what happens after we die, what is God's ultimate purpose.
One of the things that I tease out of C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce and some other things that he's written, I can't remember what, and it seems to me that Peter Kraft also teases this out, is the idea of, maybe Paralandra helps me to see this too, it seems as though what Lewis is implying is that hell is a kind of unraveling of the soul into nothingness, a negation unto nothingness, which is rather different than the idea of the soul existing in a place
of eternal torment.
Does that make sense?
Yes, I think it does. The only problem about that is that the New Testament doesn't use the word soul in the way that we Platonists assume that it does. Soul is the Hebrew nefesh, which is just the person.
Yes.
The personality is more like what we would call the personality.
I didn't mean to imply the Platonic idea of soul. I just mean we are souls.
Exactly. We who are persons.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's where these words are so difficult.
But if that
were true, because I've said this to a number of people, and they get very upset at the idea that hell would be the unmaking of a person, almost a disintegration unto nothingness.
Well, the way I see it is this: if as humans we are made to reflect God, we're made to be God reflectors, then that image, we're made to be in the image of God, which is reflecting God. The way that that is sustained is by worshiping the true God, because one of the rules of spirituality is you become like what you worship. Now, if you worship the true and living God, you are sustained in life. You become a more alive being. If you worship that which is not God, whether it's money or sex or power or any of the other things people worship, those things don't actually have life in themselves. So you're worshiping that which is essentially dead. And you are saying, I want to be like that. The Psalms say this, those who make them are like unto them, thinking of idols.
Okay, so if one, let's follow this out philosophically. If one is worshiping that which has no life, which is dead, then one in the end chooses to die and not to participate in the eternal life for which you're created. What does that mean to die? It seems to me, based on what we're saying, that it means to cease to exist utterly.
It might. I'm not clear about that. It might mean to cease to exist as an image-reflecting human being, to become an ex-image bearer, if you like.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
Which sounds like being in the hell of the medieval era.
No.
Potentially.
You could go that route, but I wouldn't. I have teased this out a bit in my book, Surprised by Hope. But I think we have to remind ourselves, and this isn't just a cop-out, this is quite a serious point, that we don't have good language for talking about either the wonderful ultimate future or the dangerous and negative. We just don't have good words and concepts to tell the right stories. So it's important to be reticent. I've often said all our language about the future is a set of signposts pointing into a fog. They may be true signposts, but they are not themselves the reality that we'll find when we get there. So there's a certain humility which is required about that.
Right, and I think there's a certain natural diffidence that you other Englishmen bring, which can also be unhelpful, and I'll say why. If one doesn't say something, one allows people to continue to think what they have been thinking. In other words, how do we correct people's views? How can we help them to think about their eternal destiny?
My short answer to the how question is through quick little sayings, which you then back up, so that I've often said resurrection isn't life after death, it's life after death. And people say, oh, what's that about? So they say, well, when you die, you go into whatever mode there is, but then God will make a new world, which is stage two of life after death. And so that gets people thinking, and then they're ready to read the New Testament at last.
Okay. So, well, there's no question that we will have resurrected bodies and that we will live in some measure in a world, thanks to the great divorce, I'm able to imagine as thicker and more real.
Exactly. And we will be thicker and more real as well.
And so, but the converse of that, in other words, if we don't choose that, we become more and more ethereal, I suppose, in the negative sense of ethereal.
Well, that's the way Lewis was envisaging it, which I think is a good narrative to help us at least get to the starting point of the discussion.
Is it possible that that's not frightening enough for some people, that they think, well, that doesn't sound so terrible, and then they just ignore the whole thing? Or is it, in fact, a good thing that it's not frightening?
I think it's a good thing. If you know James Joyce's Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, there's that terrible scene where the priest in the school chapel is preaching this hellfire sermon to scare all the kids.
You always say something spectacular just as I have to go to break. My apologies to you, folks. We'll be right back to complete that sentence and more with N.T. Wright.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey not saying whether she intends to sign a proposed abortion bill into law. That measure, allowing an abortion only with a serious health risk to the mother, is a direct challenge to the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that made the procedure legal. Ivey says she will review the legislation approved by lawmakers Tuesday night before announcing her decision. The U.S. has ordered all non-essential government staff to leave Iraq. In Colorado, prosecutors have charged the student suspected of opening fire at their Highlands Ranch school with murder and attempted murder and other counts, and are pursuing adult charges against the 16-year-old suspect. Retail sales slipped last month. The Commerce Department says that sales dropped 0.2% in April. That's after a big 1.7% jump in March. This is SRN News.
The following is a true story.
My name is David Bryant. When I was 37, my wife and I decided to get term life insurance through SelectQuote. Just 3 years later, I was diagnosed with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Because of life insurance, the people I love most in this world will be protected no matter what happens to me. I know that the dreams I have for my family can still come true. Financial security, to stay in the home we became a family in, and for our children to be able to go to college. I reached out to SelectQuote because I wanted to share my story. If just one person purchases life insurance, I know I will have made a difference.
SelectQuote can find a 37-year-old male a $500,000 policy for under a dollar a day.
If there are people you care about, you need life insurance. It may be the single most important financial decision of your life.
Don't put off protecting your family. Get your free quote now. Call 800-671-7070. That's 800-671-7070. 800-671-7070. Or go to SelectQuote.com. This is a paid endorsement. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Not available in all states.
If credit card debt has you down, nonprofit Trinity Debt Management can help. Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees, and drastically reduce your interest. You'll pay thousands less than you originally owed. It's not a loan. It's a way to become debt-free and possibly improve your credit score. So call Trinity and talk to a certified counselor. They'll explain their proven program to you with no pressure, just practical solutions and hope for tomorrow. Are you ready to pay off your credit cards in less time for less money? Then call for a free no-obligation debt analysis and become debt-free for keeps. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Gather up your bills and call this toll-free number for a free no-obligation debt analysis. Call 1-800-990-6976. That's 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976.
Folks, that's of course the great Jerry Rafferty, recently of Scotland, a little bit like our guest today, N.T. Wright. You didn't know that, did you, Jerry Rafferty, from Glasgow? Well, you were just talking about that scene in Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, where the teacher, whoever it is trying to frighten the boys to death with this kind of medieval Catholic view of hell.
Yeah, it was a medieval Protestant view as well. Yeah. I mean, it were Protestants, early Renaissance, as it were. But, the gospel is not about, oh, dear, there's a big, bad ogre called God and he's out to get you. That's the root of some of the major problems in Western Christianity to this day, the idea that God so hated us. And then, oh, by the way, he had to kill his son instead of us, so somehow that makes it all right. The gospel is about a God of generous, overflowing love. And whatever we mean by hell, it has to do with the refusal of love and the refusal to love and the spurning of love and what happens to persons when that's going on. But the real impact of the gospel is, hey, the creator of the universe loves you so much that he's done all this for you.
Do you reject the sort of hardcore Reformed view of the atonement and the wrath and that kind of thing? I was raised in the Greek Orthodox Church, so I have a rather muddled view of these things, and sometimes I'm happy for that.
Yeah, it seems to me that the Greeks have got a lot right, which we've forgotten, though no doubt all churches make mistakes. We did actually talk about this 2 years ago because my book, The Day the Revolution Began, is about theories of atonement and how they work together. And it's quite clear to me that the main theme in the New Testament is that on the cross, Jesus won the victory over all the powers of evil. The way he did that was through taking the place of sinful human beings. So it's victory through substitution rather than making those an either or. But what that does to the notion of substitution is it takes away this idea, to put it crudely, that God so hated the world that he killed his only son. No, God so loved the world that he gave his only son.
And can you back that up with scripture?
Well,
that was a joke.
I have a feeling that you probably know the reference. All your viewers do as well. John 3:16,
yeah,
folks.
It's very nuanced stuff.
But it's important because, as you know, a little bit of difference, just a slight divergence, takes you to a very different place in the long run.
So then it seems to me part of what you're saying, and certainly what I have said, because I know at least what I have thought on this, is that we can over-focus on avoiding hell and miss God in the process.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not where you should start. It's not where the New Testament starts. The New Testament starts with this person called Jesus saying, this is the time for God to become king. Give up your silly ambitions and come and join this party. And that's a very practical, down-to-earth challenge. And they follow him because they don't realize that the way God becomes king is through Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. But that then launches this idea of new creation starting now. And that's where all these other things come in.
Okay, now the outworking of that new creation starting now happens in history. We're not simply talking about personal salvation, I guess.
We're talking about personal salvation, but salvation to us often collapses back into, quote, going to heaven when you die.
Right.
Salvation means rescue from death, and rescue from death means being given a resurrection body in the new world. But that begins now with baptism, faith, conversion. You become already a new person anticipating the final newness.
Well, so what I'm asking then is when that happens, because I often say that people often wrongly think of salvation as the end line, the finish line, when in fact it's the starting line. And at that moment, we are born again. God comes to live inside us. The kingdom begins now. We are now members.
No. The kingdom begins when Jesus says, kingdom of God is at hand, and when he comes out of the tomb on Easter morning. And we, when we become Christians, we come into an already existing kingdom.
That's what I meant, actually, was that, in fact, we enter that kingdom when we're born again.
Yes.
And suddenly now we're deputized by God to live out that kingdom world.
And it's very interesting. In the book of Revelation, there's that splendid passage in chapter 5, which says, which praises Jesus, the Lamb who was slain, because he has ransomed humans for God to make them a royal priesthood, to rule on the earth. In other words, it isn't, oh, phew, we're saved, we're all right now. It's we're saved, and now we've got a job to do.
Yeah. And so that job, I guess, what I want to ask you is that when William Wilberforce, because of his evangelical faith, determines to deliberately force in Parliament this issue of ending the slave trade, I would see that as an outworking of what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
You would agree.
Absolutely.
And the religious liberty that I would maybe somewhat nationalistically think of as beginning mostly here in 1776, but that too is something that comes out of the gospel and out of Luther and comes into the world, and it's part of that outworking.
Well, yes and no. And actually, I'd probably say no and yes. I mean, the religious liberty of the 1770s in America has all sorts of things to do with getting rid of King George III and goodness knows what, because he was sending bishops to the colonies and they didn't want that. And it was also to do with the fact that a lot of the earlier American settlers were coming to America precisely because of rather draconian new religious settlements.
Okay,
and they said, we're not going to do that anymore.
We're going to be right back to continue that and other sentences with N.T. Wright. Stick around. Hey, Albin.
Yes?
My name is Eric Metaxas.
I know.
I'm the host of the Eric Metaxas Show, and
congrats.
I wanted to tell my audience about ReliefFactor.com. Relief Factor works for me. I take it every day. That's why I can hawk it on this program, because I actually believe in it. I tell all my relatives to take it because it works. The Quick Start Pack is $19.95. It's insane not to try it. ReliefFactor.com. But, you know, they don't listen to me.
What?
So I thought maybe they'll listen to Doug from Colorado. Let's see.
I had gotten to the point where I could no longer walk, let alone hike, more than a half a mile without sitting down to rest. I had switched to bicycle riding from hiking because I could still get exercise without pain. I heard on the radio about Relief Factor helping some people. On October 3rd, I started two packets a day of Relief Factor. From that day to this, I have been able to hike normally.
Hey, pain is no joke. This guy, it changed his life. There, many people say this has changed their life. ReliefFactor.com.
You're a do-it-yourselfer. You fix things around the house, take care of the yard, wash your car, and on top of it all, run your own business. But wow, when it comes to digital marketing and advertising, things aren't so do-it-yourself. You need results and just aren't getting them on your own. Salem Surround will get you results. We know digital marketing and how to deliver customers so you can run your business. Using every digital marketing tool possible is a necessity to compete in today's business world. But you have to know about all the options. Our team at Salem Surround has the expertise to manage all your digital marketing under one roof. Get started with a free evaluation of your digital presence and some great ideas to increase your online visibility and, most importantly, revenue. There really are no limitations on how and where you can reach customers with Salem Surround. Total market penetration for increased ROI. Learn more at SalemSurround.com. SalemSurround.com. Connecting you with new customers.
I'm pretty handy around the house, but now that I have kids, I don't want to spend my Saturday installing a toilet or fixing an air conditioner. But thankfully, there's HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor helps me find the best home pros in my area to handle any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started.
HomeAdvisor.
Everyone's talking about Better Together, the exciting new talk show by women and for women airing daily on TBN Television Network. Join host Lori Crouch and some awesome women of faith in action. Better Together is a fast-moving 30 minutes of honest, engaging conversation about all sorts of issues. No topic is off limits. That's what Better Together is all about, living, loving, and growing in God's grace together as friends and family. Join in weekdays at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific for Better Together, exclusively on TBN.
Okay, Facebook and Google, do you think they value your privacy? Of course not. It's the opposite. Big tech companies make a lot of money from your personal information. Gmail by Google, along with Yahoo, AOL, and other free email providers, have a history of scanning mailboxes and delivering targeted ads within those accounts. It's an old saying, and it's still true. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Somebody has to pay, and you are paying with your personal private information. Now, Ronald Reagan would not stand for this. He believed your freedom and your privacy were individual rights that came from God and were protected by our Constitution's Bill of Rights. Take back your God-given right to privacy now. Get a Reagan email address at ReaganPrivacy.com. Unlike other email providers, they don't scan or record your emails. They leave you alone. A Reagan email address costs as little as $33 a year. That's only 9 cents a day. Plus, get two free bonus months when you sign up now. Get your Reagan email address today at ReaganPrivacy.com. That's ReaganPrivacy.com.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to N.T. Wright, and you're not, but you get to listen. N.T. or Tom, as you let me call you, I just have to ask you because I want to think this through. And without you, I don't know that I'm going to be able to do this. So help me understand. We were talking about the king. Jesus declares the kingdom is here and we get to participate. And when we are born again and eternity comes to live inside us, we are members of this kingdom and we get to live it out in all kinds of various ways. One of which we said is when Wilberforce ends the slave trade. That's an outworking of that, it seems to me. I mentioned religious liberty because I think the idea that people all around the world ought to be able to be free to choose what they want to worship, how they want to worship, whether they want to worship, and that the governments must stay out of that. They cannot force that. One cannot force anyone. You know, you can declare everyone. Everyone is Church of England because you're in England, you're sure, in Greece, sure. Everybody's Greek Orthodox. Practically speaking, usually it means people retreat from any kind of serious faith and they treat it like something that they have to give lip service to.
There's all sorts of problems with this. One is that the word religion has changed its meaning over the years, and the definition of the word religion that people now have in the Western world is precisely what isn't part of public life. It's something people do with their solitude or in private and so on. It was never like that in the ancient world, and it's certainly not like that for most human beings on the planet today, because we have lived, as I said half an hour ago, in the Epicurean split world where religion has to do with upstairs and we will run the downstairs.
But I'm actually agreeing with you. In other words, that's the problem, is that in places like America, religion has become increasingly marginalized into this,
But that's because you did the deal in the 18th century, which was a complete capitulation to the Enlightenment of saying, let's separate it off so then we don't need to worry about it bumping into our public life.
Okay, actually, that is a misinterpretation. No, if you read Richard John Neuhaus's The Naked Public Square, that is maybe what happened, but it certainly wasn't the idea. The idea of the framers in America was that people could robustly and must live out their faith.
I understand
not
that.
Keep it in a room on Sunday mornings.
Yes-ish, but there's all sorts of other issues going on there.
Yes-ish.
And today, when we live in a world of many so-called religions, not that they mostly think of themselves like that, which is why we've now talked about other faiths, and then we say, oh, actually, they don't think of themselves as faiths either. What are they? They're not the same sorts of things, Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism, Islam, etc. They are significantly different, and our word religion and are saying religion there, public life there, does no service to them either. And then when you get as many have pointed out, that many religions, including tragically sometimes Christianity, have the capacity to turn violent and to do wicked things, then you say, so you're going to let people get on with that if that's part of their religion? And the answer is no, we don't want that. So I think it's time for a total renegotiation of the whole topic, to be honest, which is probably more than we've got time for
well,
right now.
Well, but I think I'm very interested in this because I do think that one of the fundamental misunderstandings in the United States, I can only speak for the United States, although we could talk about Europe, I think that that is at the heart of the unraveling of the pure idea that the founders had of self-government and liberty. In other words, to be genuinely free is to be free to live out my faith in the public sphere. And this very late idea, it's about 50 years old, that we've got to push religion out of public life, it's fundamentally unbiblical and I would say fundamentally un-American. But we've been laboring against this for some decades. That's
very interesting. You have a sort of history of salvation in which something happened in 1770 as a result of which everything went good and then the last 50 years
gone bad. No, I don't mean to say I'm kidding when I say 1770.
But what I'm saying is that actually, if you look at what, as far as I understand it, what's going on in the second half of the 18th century is heavily dependent on philosophers like John Locke, for instance, a major figure. And Locke is an ambiguous figure. From a Christian point of view, I want to say yeses and noes to Locke and to Hume and all the others. This whole history of ideas thing is really, really fascinating.
Yeah.
And I agree, we have to squirrel away and try and understand the roots of our present confusion.
Yeah. Well, to me in America today, for example, that if I want to say I have a biblical view of sexuality, right? Now, to have real freedom means that I can talk about that, I can teach about that, I'm free to live out my Christian faith in that. Then the government comes in and says, no.
You're not allowed to say this or that.
We have now, the government, have adopted what is essentially a religious view. Because when we're talking about ultimates like sexuality and what it is to be human, these things bump up into religion. And so once the government sides with one of these views over the other, problems ensue because it's an abrogation of religious liberty.
Yes, but it seems to me that's what happens when you've had a vacuum for a long time because those two haven't come together, and then suddenly this is welcome to postmodernity moment. And because the same is true with language about Islam and so on, for instance, where people are now not allowed to say that Islam is a violent religion because many Muslims will say, no, we follow the Quran as we read it and it's not violent. But then that is called hate speech and so on. And this is the decline of public discourse, particularly public moral discourse, into victimhood on the one hand and prejudice on the other. And I want to say, actually, there is such a thing as reasoned discourse, and that's a Christian imperative to which we have to return.
I agree almost violently.
Good, I'm so glad.
With that idea. And it's only almost. I think that that to me is what is happening in America as well.
And in Europe. Yeah.
Well, for sure in Europe. And it's very lamentable. But I do think that there is still enough robust Christianity in America of various kinds that they say, wait a minute, we have been given by the framers the freedom to live out our faith and to talk about it. And we've got to be very, very careful in beginning to say, no, you can't say this and you can't say this.
I think that's fair enough. Of course, I live in a country that doesn't have a written constitution and which everything comes from bottom up and we sort of a consensus sort of emerges. And then when it doesn't anymore, as with Brexit, we're all in trouble because we don't know how to handle that. I would say just be a little bit careful about putting the framers on too high a pedestal because they too are human. They're not infallible.
Well, I don't have a problem agreeing with that either. All right, we've got a final segment in this show with N.T. Wright. Stick around. And if you have not yet, go to MetaxasTalk.com and please give generously to Angel Tree. We really need your help. God bless you.
Are you overwhelmed, unable to think clearly or sleep well at night? Are just trudging through each day but not really enjoying your life? I'm a counselor with Faithful Counseling. And that feeling of distress can sometimes be because you're wrestling with a problem that seems too big or too impossible to overcome. Other times, people are consumed by a past hurt. I'm part of a network of Christian counselors, fellow believers, trusted therapists who share your faith. We want to give you a free week so you can try us out. You can begin a conversation with one of us by text or phone, even video conferencing today. Are you ready to shake this off and begin enjoying your life? If it's not for you, cancel during your first week and you'll not pay a dime. Go to TryFaithfulCounseling.com. It's time to talk to someone who can help. Go now to TryFaithfulCounseling.com. It's so easy to get started and your first week is free. Go now to TryFaithfulCounseling.com.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Alabama lawmakers have passed a near-total ban on abortion.
If signed into law, the measure would be the most restrictive abortion ban in the U.S. The state Senate on Tuesday passed the bill that would make performing an abortion at any stage of pregnancy a felony. The bill now goes to Alabama Governor Kay Ivey. She'll decide whether to sign the bill into law.
That's correspondent Andrew Stewart. Meanwhile, Kentucky, Mississippi, Ohio, and Georgia recently have approved bans on abortion once a fetal heartbeat is detected. President Trump is meeting with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to discuss Iran. This comes after the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad ordered all non-essential, non-emergency government staff to leave Iraq immediately. The U.S. earlier moved an aircraft carrier and other resources toward the region. On Wall Street, the Dow ahead 180 points. This is SRN News.
You a stock or options trader looking for real trading strategies that you can use immediately? Hi, my name is Scott Bauer, CEO of Prosper Trading Academy, and I'm on a mission to become the number one options coach in America. I'm a former vice president at Goldman Sachs. I have over 25 years of options trading experience, and right now, I'm giving away my most famous options guide with over 20 unique options strategies that I use every day for free. You can't buy this guide anywhere. To claim your free options trading guide, simply call 855-892-2307 now and mention my name, Scott Bauer, and we will rush you the guide. Call 855-892-2307 and someone from my options team will help you get this guide in your inbox as quickly as possible. Call 855-892-2307 now and start learning to trade the right way. Call 855-892-2307. 2307, prosper with options.
Stocks and options trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Texas show, and I'm talking to N.T. Wright about lots of important things. We'll have a second show to continue the conversation. We were just talking about the founders, the framers, the U.S. framers, and you said don't put them on too high a pedestal. Certainly not. I mean, we want to be careful. At the same time, I want to figure out, simply as a Christian, what is right and how does that come into government? In other words, what is the role of government in dealing with people of faith? And I must say that because of George Whitefield, that Christianity had a large part in enabling people to think we have no king but Jesus. We can govern ourselves. We're responsible to God directly, not to the magistrate or the governor. Those ideas were very important at that point.
Yes, yes, that's true. And we have parallel things in my country as well, though it played out differently because of our earlier civil war, which had a strong religious component to it. So part of the difficulty is figuring out the historical memories that have conditioned the way we think so that we ask questions in a certain light. And I think the Western world in general, because it hasn't wanted to do business with serious theology, has got some catch-up to do. And for me, I go back to the New Testament and I see a lot of things there about, say, Jesus' conversation with Pontius Pilate, where what are they arguing about? Kingdom and truth and power. Those sound pretty relevant to me. But I think when you see what Jesus is actually saying, all sorts of things get somewhat adjusted from even the best that we've done in the last 300 or 400 years. These are huge issues. We need a week's seminar to get on.
Yeah, well, the good news is that people can go to ntwrightonline.org. I've just been told. ntwrightonline.org, right with a W. I think people can spell NT, ntwriteonline.org. And if they go there, there are a number of courses that that you teach, which are relevant to everything we're talking about 20 courses available. But if viewers go to ntwriteonline.org/Eric, they will get a coupon for a complimentary, which is to say free, course on the Lord's Prayer. So why don't you do that? ntwriteonline.org/Eric, and you'll get a coupon for a free course of the kind we're discussing here on the Lord's Prayer. There are many other courses. How many of these have you taught now?
I think we've got 20 courses. And, I mean, it's a neat idea, which my colleague David Seamuth from Wisconsin has set up, where instead of me dashing around the world, because I'm getting older, you may not have noticed.
And I'm not, but
no,
go ahead.
That's fine. Good luck to you. But instead of me going around talking to as many people as I can, they bring a camera into my office, and I talk in sort of 15-minute bursts about the letter to the Romans or about God and the future or whatever it is, or the Lord's Prayer, and then it gets edited and gets out there.
Thank the Lord that someone has sat you down to do this, because in fact I have these arguments with all my genius friends like yourself, John Lennox and others, and I think, my goodness, it isn't right for you to be speaking to small groups and flying here and flying there. You need to get this out on the internet so that people everywhere can have the benefit of what you've got to say.
I mean, it's extraordinary. About 10 years ago, these mass online courses, the MOOCs things, started to sprout.
Yeah.
And some universities actually put cameras in professors' classes and made the stuff available. And St. Andrews wasn't doing it, where I teach, wasn't doing that at that time. So, okay, we'll do it anyway. So we have got into that.
This is the end of hour one. We'll do some of hour two shortly. Tom Wright, thank you so much.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.